ITS Coffee Break for Monday, May 17th, 2010.
On this week's edition of the ITS Coffee Break, we'll let you know about some summer plans involving Moodle and Nightly Camp. In tech news, we've got a new arrival, and we'll tell you all about it.
Welcome to the ITS Coffee Break. My name's Ken Newquist.
And I'm Courtney Bentley.
And we've got some news about summer plans. I can't believe we're talking summer plans already.
I know. It's really crazy that, I guess the last day of finals is tomorrow?
Yeah. And I think my daughter only has, two or three more weeks of school left.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy. This semester has just flown by, it seems. But we've been really busy.
Yes, we have been ridiculously busy. So, whoops. There go my show notes.
So as far as summer plans go, Nightly is hosting its annual camp event this June. And as in the past, they're including a full day dedicated just to Moodle.
Which should be pretty cool. I mean, yeah. I like going to the Moodle camps. We certainly got a lot out of them in the first early days of our own Moodling.
Yep.
So I just got an email about presenting there. So...
Oh, yeah? I'm on the planning committee.
Yeah. So I guess I'll have to sit down and think about it. You know, the temptation, there's a strong temptation to just go and attend everybody else's events, right?
But, yeah, I agree.
Especially since I think we've spoken at every other event that's happened, right? But yeah. In any case, that's coming up. And then happening concurrently with that, or not concurrently, well, kind of concurrently.
Yeah,
it's happening concurrently with the rest of the camp, but... right after Moodle Camp is going to be the Moodle Hack Doc Fest at DePaul University, which is basically us getting together again to work on code, write documentation, do all that kind of cool stuff. So,
and I can't believe this is the sixth time that we've done this.
This is the sixth time.
So I'm kind of sad because I'm staying home this time.
Yeah,
I'll be working from here.
I think we might do the whole Jabber thing. You have a Jabber server running in the back end so that everybody can chat with one another.
Yeah, that's a good idea.
Yeah, we'll see how it goes. So I'm excited about Hack Doc Fest. It's always, at this point, we've done it so many times and that the usual suspects come back. It's just getting together with friends and working, which, some people might not find that to be fun, but we do. So it's pretty cool. So if you're interested in either of these two events, you can get them in the show notes.
And in other IT news, I just want to mention that if there are any new incoming students who are listening to the podcast for maybe the first time, you should either have already received or will be receiving your network credentials in the mail. It's going to come to you in a mailing from the dean of the college office, but those credentials are from IT. So welcome and happy logging into everything.
So, Facebook has been just really in the news
evil.
A lot, right?
It's
evil. We talked about this in
we
our
did.
Last show, but we wanted to come back to it because there's a couple of students who are at NYU, and they are hoping to build an open source alternative to Facebook. There's an article about this on the website ReadWriteWeb, and it's called the Diaspora Project. We're just debating exactly how to pronounce this. Diaspora. The Diaspora Project. In any case, the whole idea is basically to give people an alternative to Facebook. Now, this isn't necessarily recreating Facebook. I think what they were trying to looking at was kind of more of a loose confederation of sites kind of thing, where you have a central place that you can modify to have your data, but then use that to log into different services. You're not tied down to one particular place. The idea being that everybody can spread out from Facebook. So
that's the name.
Yeah, and I think they did this as a fundable So I don't know if you've encountered Fundable at all, but basically this is kind of a new way of doing startup type things. So basically people pitch projects and say, hey, if we get X amount of money, we'll do this. So I think their Fundable requirement was something like $15,000 or $20,000. They got it. They actually exceeded it. I think they hit like $24,000. Wow. And they're using that as seed money to get the project going. So I thought that was pretty cool.
Absolutely.
There's actually, on a kind of related note, like there's this geek project. It's for a game book. And this guy did the same thing. He said, look, you know, if you guys really like this game, because one of the games I play is Ending. He said, look, I'll create a new book for it. All I need is $15,000. People hit the goal. They ended up raising like $24,000 and boom. Now this guy's basically made that his full-time job to produce this book.
That's the really cool thing about like the social network that exists right now is that we're no longer really having to rely on as many gatekeepers as in the past. We're able to actually make our own choices to some extent.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. And the, like, for example, with this book, I think, I don't know how, people do it in different kinds of ways, but you can have different funding levels. So, and you can tie different, basically, well, not rights, but privileges to those funding levels. So you might just say, okay, well, I'll give $20 to this project because I think it's cool. But then the next level, maybe it's $100, you get to be in on the conference calls. Or you get to go to a private forum to discuss how this book is going to come together. Like $250, you know, now you're in on the conference calls about the book, you know. I think like the top tier was like, you know, it's like $1,000 and you get to go to Gen Con and play this game with the person who created it, right? But it's cool that, you know, that we can do this kind of stuff, that you can have somebody who just says, this is a cool project, I think it's worthwhile doing. A couple thousand people say, yeah, and boom. It takes off.
Yeah.
So pretty cool.
Interesting.
So two interesting things there. The other interesting thing is our new baby.
Yeah, we have a new arrival. It's very exciting. It's shiny and new, but is it useful?
Yeah, it's the iPad.
It's the iPad. It arrived finally this week. Thanks, Apple, for standing us up for how many weeks?
Oh, my God. I think we've been driving Tammy crazy.
Probably.
Going past there, like the receivables table every day saying, is that an iPod back? Is that an iPad box?
Yeah, so the iPad's here, and I loaded it up the first day with some of my stuff, and then Ken, you wiped it and put some of your stuff on it. And so, I mean, the advantage is that text looks totally amazing.
And I got to say, I've used my mom's Nook e-reader. I've seen the Kindle. I think this, at least from a quality standpoint, and especially color, it's beautiful. I think it kind of blows it away.
Yeah, it is really beautiful. And most PDFs are really easy to read if you've got the right application on there to open them. Ken and also Kelvin at home was totally geeking out about comics because those look beautiful.
I mean, this is basically like the killer app for digital comics. I mean, it's perfect. I read a couple of Marvel comics earlier in the week, and it's just like, wow. Like, the colors are so bright. You know, it's so easy to read comics on it. I mean, I don't know how many people among our listeners are going to be getting it to read comics, but I think it really speaks to just how well it does the kind of like this mixed media type stuff, you know, where it's not just text, but text looks pretty good too.
Right. And then, of course, you know, the advantage is web browsing, so having that capability right at your fingertips is nice too. There are some limitations though.
Well, and that's the thing that was driving me crazy with it, because I do a monthly column about different game websites, and I thought, well, let me try it with the iPad, because that's one of the reasons why I wanted to get one. And, you know, it's easy enough to surf, and it's easy enough to, like, find what you're looking for, but then how do I put it into Delicious?
Yep.
You know, how do I assemble my list of links? So I was able to, you know, kind of awkwardly cut and paste stuff into Notepad and then email that list to me, but it was awkward. I mean, I would really like some sort of, even if it's Apple's own thing, social bookmarking option that will allow me to basically add bookmarks to a folder in my on the iPad, sync it back up to my Mac, and then boom, something like that. But you can't use Delicious because it's the Safari mobile browser.
Right, so, and it won't take the plugin.
Right.
Yeah. So, I mean, apps that we like so far were GoodReader was really nice because it allows you to actually, when you sync it with your Mac or your computer, you can actually push over PDFs and images and all kinds of stuff like that.
And I found that they, like 90% of the PDFs came over perfectly, because I have a huge number of PDFs, which is one of the reasons why I wanted to get this. But I found that there were some oddball things, and from a layout illustrator standpoint, I think it's just how they did the...
Right.
It's how they created the document and how the different EPS files within the document were rendering within the... You know, it's just... Not to geek out about publishing stuff, but you can get into... You can have some really gnarly issues with nested EPS files, and I think that's probably the problem that they were having. So it wasn't so much Goodreader that was the problem as it was the PDF.
Right. Yeah, it's usually PDFs that I've had trouble with on my Mac, like with Preview or that type of thing.
Right, right. So it's like, you know, the transparencies weren't working properly and that kind of thing. But for the most part, worked beautifully and it looked beautiful. I mean, there's a magazine that I get in PDF and it was as good or better than reading it in the print version. I'm not getting rid of my print version because I love my print magazine, but it was pretty darn cool. Other usual suspects, Twitterific was pretty cool. Pandora, also very cool. The thing I noticed about Twitterific, it was very easy to actually use my lists. Like, I have a couple of different lists of people I follow, but I don't really use them. I just kind of use them to keep track of people. But on this, it was so easy to just kind of click through the lists and see what those people had to say.
I'll have to look at that one.
Much more so than on the iPad or on the iPod Touch.
Yeah.
Or even on my Mac.
Interesting. So. An app that I don't like so much is GDocs.
This is the right name, right?
I think so. We should probably look it up. Or maybe it was GoDocs.
Might be GoDocs.
Well, we'll make sure it's right in the show notes. But basically, I downloaded it thinking, just from my skimming, that I was going to be able to actually do something useful with my Google Docs account with it. But alas, no. It does not do anything useful. It downloads an offline copy, but it just lets me read it.
Right. And that was my only disappointment with the iPad in terms of web interface was... You know, a lot of people make a big deal of Flash. I really don't care. It only came into place once when I was looking at the Fundable site, and it didn't display the Fundable icon because it was in Flash. But I can't log into Google. Like, I can log into Google Docs. I can see my Google Docs. I can't edit my Google Docs.
Yeah, and that's really annoying.
And that is really annoying. So the one thing I want as far as the app goes is I'd like to see the MLB At-Bat app on the iPad, just take advantage of that full real estate. Because I think that would be, like, for baseball geeks, being able to sit down and watch the game and just have all this data. Because, I mean, honestly, half of baseball is data, right? Having That's all true. These different things kind of streaming in, going to be able to look up, well, what was that last pitch? Oh, yeah, you know. That would be really, really cool.
Yeah, well, maybe Chip Notaro will take a look at that. So all of this talk about the iPad is to come around to the point, really, of why we got it, which is for us to think about educational uses for it. So if you're a faculty member here at Lafayette and you're interested in taking a look at it, please come by or pop me an email and, you know, we can arrange to let you take it for a day or so and sort of give it a test drive and see what you can come up with.
And I think, I mean, we've talked a lot about educational apps for the iPhone.
Right.
I think that there's a lot of potential with the iPad as well, and people just kind of need to get there. But I think that the big advantage of it is really all the screen real estate.
Absolutely.
Because, yeah. I mean, some people just said, oh, it's just a big iPhone. Yeah, but it's a big iPhone. I mean, it's a big, beautiful touch interface. I mean, I don't think that you can discount that. So right. I'm interested to see what happens, and we'll have to follow up now that we have one to play with. So.
Absolutely.
So the last thing I want to mention, this is more of a, this is a very geeky thing, but it could have some implications in terms of education and gaming, which, you know, Brian Alexander, you're out there somewhere, I'm sure, playing games. But so the big news is that Steam, which is a game software distribution network, basically, put out by a company called Valve, is coming to the Mac. And what this is going to allow you to do is play a huge number of games on the Mac. Now, one of the drawbacks to the Mac has traditionally been a lack of games.
Yeah.
So I have friends who use Steam extensively on the PC side to get cheap games and to play, but I haven't been able to do it because it didn't work on the Mac. Now it does. And I think the best game, I do think this comes into teaching in a little bit, is the game called Portal, which I don't know if you ever got a chance to play Portal.
I haven't actually played it.
But it is
so
cool.
Though, right?
Right. It's a first-person game, but it's not really a shooter. You have this gun that creates portals. So you shoot it at the wall, and you can step through this portal. And then you shoot another portal, and you come out of that one. And it plays with gravity. So if I shoot the floor, and I shoot the wall, if I jump through the floor, then I'm falling. But when I come out the wall, I'll have acceleration because I was falling.
Hmm.
Right? So the game plays with that. Like, you can go anywhere you want, except that in order to get there, you have to use these portals. You really have to think. My daughter, who's 7, just absolutely loves this game. She thinks it's so cool. So I'll be interested to see what happens with that. There's a lot of really nifty games that are out there, and I don't know how it'll intersect with education, but I know people have used games in a lot of creative ways, and this gives you more alternatives on the Mac.
Well, in help news, we actually do have some stuff going on.
I think that that's a massive understatement.
And the reason Ken says that is because the summer workshop schedule is now online.
And you guys are doing an awful lot.
We are, actually. So it's pretty exciting. The summer, we're kicking off the summer workshop session actually next week. Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, we're hosting a... each day it's 1 hour, and it's a web writing boot camp, and it's a webinar, and it should be pretty cool. So we've sent out invitations to all of the administrators and editors who have departmental sites here on campus, but obviously anyone on campus is welcome to attend. Each day is different content, so it's you can come all 3 days from one to two, and hang out with us and hear about writing for the web.
I think it should be cool because we do get this request a lot from departments saying, but I don't know how to write for the web.
Right. So this should be pretty nice, sort of easy way for us to pick up some information about that. And that only kicks off the summer schedule. So we've got tons of workshops scheduled. Everything from Pat Fasapani is probably going to do the very last Second Life workshop that'll happen in June. We're doing things on PDFs and data management and data stewardship and
WordPress
and Windows 7
and Moodle
and Openio and basically tons of stuff.
If we have the app, we pretty much have a workshop for it at this point.
Yeah, there's a few things.
Even Google Docs, right?
Yeah, we're doing Google Docs. We're also doing Prezi. So some fun stuff, some very useful stuff, all kind of mixed in together. And another thing that hasn't actually been released yet is that we are doing a small pilot of lynda.com's training, online training sessions. So I have 5 seats available for our campus, and basically what it allows me to do is to add a Lafayette user to the account, gives you access to all of the training files and materials and online resources for...
So this is like Flash and...
This is
Photoshop
everything.
Photoshop.
But it's also access.
Word. Oh, really? Cool.
Yeah. I mean, the reason we got it is because I'm not going to be offering a whole lot of access workshops anytime soon.
Right.
But there are a lot of people on campus who need some, you know,
right.
refresher. So, yeah, everything. Access, operating systems, servers.
Wow.
Pretty much anything you could imagine.
I just always
there.
Associate them with, like, web training.
Yeah, I know. But they've really come pretty far. It's... yeah, so it looks like a good thing. So if you or someone in your office is interested in spending a week or so doing some training, please contact me, and we'll set you up with that.
So I guess the other thing is the end is nigh for Dub2.
It is indeed.
So we just kind of wanted to get this out there that there's actually links on how to do all this stuff, but we wanted to talk about a little bit about the migration. So basically the idea is you have a website on Dub2, you created a new site in WordPress, either on Sites or on Deps, and now you're ready for the links to be changed and for the main Lafayette website to point to your new site and all that. And how do you do it? And basically what it comes down to is you fill out a form.
That's right. So if you're a Deps site, if you just go to deps.lafayette.edu, I think it's like the 3rd or 4th block down. There's a post that I made, and it basically says what Ken said, and then it has links to how to do it. So just fill out a quick form. Basically, it's just going to ask you who you are and what the new site URL is, and if you had an old site, what that URL is.
Yeah, and then basically the procedure is, now you have to make sure your site is publicly accessible.
Correct.
And then communications, we'll take a gander at it, do a little bit of proofreading, and, you know, for looking for, you know, grammatical errors, that kind of stuff. Offer you some suggestions, and once all that's good to go, they'll set up redirects, and traffic will go from one site to the other. For sites, on sites, you know, campus organizations, that kind of stuff, those kind of things go through Student Life. They'll review it, same basic deal. If it's a personal site, just make it public. It's good to go.
Yep.
So, I mean, I guess just give yourself a little bit of time, you know, for people to review it. But aside from that, it should be fairly straightforward. There'll be links to both of these forums in the show notes.
Yeah. So it looks like it's going to be a fun, busy summer for everyone.
Heck yeah.
So hopefully we'll get a few more of these out so you can, you know, enjoy listening to us at the beach or wherever you go.
Yeah. So we are always looking for feedback. You can send it to us by either stopping by the site at sites.lafayette.edu/coffeebreak, or you can send us an email at itsblog@lafayette.edu.